Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for holding on. Thank you so much for tolerating my little rant. You know, it's just so emotional what we're talking about. And listen, the first 2 hours, I just can't say enough about that. If you missed it, anybody just now coming in, please go back and listen to the archive. The archives will probably be up probably on a Monday. Hopefully no later Monday, but we're coming on. We're going to listen. It's not going to let off. As a matter of fact, it may get hotter. We have the Bitter Ender coming back, and he's going to crank it up. Napalm Part 2. He's going to... We usually try to be real calm and collected here, but I don't know. People like Gene come on and get me all stirred up, man. But anyway.
That's right. That's anyway, my we're calling bringing... in life.
Yes. Well, we've got... I'm going to shut my mouth and bring the expert on. The Bitter Ender has got another dynamite program that's going to just going to Velcro mesh with what we just did the last 2 hours. But go ahead, Bitter Ender.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. We had talked about this about a week or so ago, and appreciate you giving us a chance to do our Confederate History Hour, and really wanted to tie it in with the first 2 hours that you've had. I've always been a great admirer of Paul Fromm, and of course, Sister Monica, I think she is the Joan of Arc of the 21st century.
Got
and
that right.
Some of the things that they've had, and the German gentleman that you had on, all the information that he gave us, the truth from person that was actually there, firsthand accounts. And that's how you defeat propaganda. You talk to people that were actually there. So what we're going to do on our third hour is compare the Confederate States of America, mainly the civilians, to Germany during and after the war, what happened to the civilians in Germany. Now, backing it up a few hundred years, when I was 6 years old, they had a program on TV called Victory at Sea, and it was a lot of the war documentaries, and I really liked it. I liked that music by Richard Rodgers, that opening theme where they showed the V coming out of the ocean there, and that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I, you know, as a six-year-old, I believed all the stuff that I saw about them dirty Nazis and them sneaky little Japs and all this kind of stuff like that. But I was just 6 years old, and all the propaganda movies, you know, The Longest Day and Saving Private Ryan, excuse me.
You got it right the first time.
Yeah, well, all the junk that we've been bombarded with. But as I got older, I started doing some research on my own, and it really hit me that the history that we were taught in school, in a lot of schools, and certainly now in colleges and schools today, about the South and our cause and our struggle for an independent nation, and the things they tell are on TV, it's just basically a lie. It's propaganda. It's war propaganda. And then I started seeing some of the same parallels of what they were talking about Germany before and during the Second World War. And it really hit me that the Southern people and the German people, especially the civilians, have suffered through the same kind of lies and propaganda and slander from the great, mighty, all-powerful United States of America. And what a lying barrel of snakes we've got in this country and the news media and our politicians. And you go back and you start reading things from other accounts, just our historical propaganda that we've been fed over these years, but reading some of the other individuals. First of all, the book that really opened my eyes a lot was M.S. King's book, The Bad War. And talking about, of course, they always referred to World War II as the good war. You know, we were fighting against the Germans and the Japs and all this kind of stuff. But the bad people, I think, were on our side, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin. And the war crimes committed by our wonderful Soviet allies against German civilians, well, any civilians in Eastern Europe, were horrific. And they can whine and moan and cry all they want to about the 6 million Jews. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what the Russians slaughtered and our wonderful allies, firebombing of Dresden and Hamburg and things like that. Then the other book that I read was David Irving's Germany's War, about, you know, telling exactly what happened and exactly what the Germans said, which, you know, most of the things we were fed, saying that, oh, Hitler said this and Hitler said that, he never said it. It's a lie. It was made up by our propaganda mills once again. And then another book that our great fact checker, Rich Hamblin, let me read, was Joachim von Ribbentrop. A biography of him, his life, written by his son. Of course, von Ribbentrop was murdered right at the end of the war by the Allies. And von Ribbentrop was the German foreign ambassador. And that book, page after page after page after page of that book, to the point that it almost gets boring, has all of the attempts that he made through the Foreign Office to Great Britain and to France to try to work out some kind of peace solution to what was happening to the German civilians living in Poland. And then we find out that Churchill and the French government and even Roosevelt were telling the Poles, keep attacking the German people, keep attacking the Germans there, that Polish corridor, part of Germany that was taken away after World War One, and the port of Danzig and that sort of thing, that area of Poland. So they kept telling the Poles to keep, you know, committing atrocities against the German and sucker Germany into a war with Poland. And then we, the British and the French and Roosevelt, will jump in there on your side and we'll get our war with Germany. And Churchill wanted a war with Germany because he saw Germany as an economic rival to England. And it was. In fact, it was more than a rival. It was way ahead of England because Hitler had pulled Germany out of the Depression. And the British Empire and the United States and France, they were still mired in the Depression. And my dad even said that. I mean, he grew up during that era. He said all of Roosevelt's alphabetical junk, the WPA and the CCC and all of this stuff like that, I said that didn't pull us out of the Depression. It was the Second World War, and all these people going to work in these defense plants and making tons of money, of course, putting our government into billions of dollars in debt. That was the only thing that pulled this country out of the Depression. So anyway, a lot of what we've been told is a lie. And not only about Germany, but about the South. The Northern press lied about the South before, during, and after the war. So fake news is not a recent phenomenon. All they can talk about is the slavery issue. The South went to war and had 280-something thousand of its young men, about a fourth of the men that were in the Southern armies were killed. And the only reason they went off to fight, and it was because of slavery. And I've read different accounts, anywhere from 80 to 85, 87% of the Southern soldiers didn't own slaves. Now, what person in their right mind would go off and live on food that you wouldn't feed a rat if you could get food at all, and march barefoot through the ice and snow and go through suffering horrific wounds and go back in the army and be wounded a second or third time to keep blacks around as slaves? That makes no sense at all. But that's the propaganda that we get. And once again, it's propaganda. And to go back and clarify that, I know we've talked about this before on some of the Blood River programs. Slavery was not the issue. It was the same issue that's been brought up since, prehistoric civilization. It was over money. And when the Southern states left, that meant that Lincoln wasn't going to be able to collect his tariffs on imported goods from Europe. And the South was an agricultural country. We didn't have a lot of industry down here. So we would sell our cotton, tobacco, sugarcane to England, France, Spain, all these other countries. And then we would import whatever manufactured materials we needed, cloth or mechanical equipment, whatever, from England. That was our main trading partner. Well, Lincoln said, what will happen to my tariffs when those seven states had had enough of Lincoln and the radical Republicans? And what you have to remember back then, the Republican Party was the nutcase party, like the Democrats are today. So if you imagine Chuck Schumer and AOC and Nancy Pelosi and who that screaming fat black woman is in Dallas, something Crockett, they would have been in the Republican Party back then. So we'll go ahead and continue our comparison after the break.
Thank you so much, Bitterinder. Right back, folks.
Step into the boots of the American West with Range Magazine, where grit meets grace. This is a front row seat to the stories, struggles, and triumphs of ranchers, farmers, and stewards of the land. From jaw-dropping photography to no-nonsense reporting, Range brings you the untold tales of life on the range. Whether you're a city dweller with a cowboy's heart or living life where the pavement ends, Range speaks to the soul of the West. Subscribe today at rangemagazine.com.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Are you ready to stand up for your community and support your local sheriff? Join the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association and become a vital member of the Sheriff's Citizens Posse. At CSPOA.org, we empower citizens like you through weekly webinars, arming you with the knowledge to back your constitutional county sheriff. Together, we can uphold our Constitution and ensure liberty and justice for all. Your community needs you now more than ever.
Bitterinder. We can't say enough about the Bitterinder. You know, I'm an open book. I don't have a shy bone in my body. I love the Bitterinder like my own brother. I consider him my brother. And I know that he loved that program as a kid. I very seldom had a TV, but when I could go to my friend's house, we would watch that show, and I loved it myself. And so we did that in the honor of the Bitterinder himself. Go ahead, Bitterinder.
That was really cool. Gosh, I hadn't heard that theme song in 50 years, I guess. So
that was really neat. Childhood.
Yeah,
I hope you like
it.
Well, me and Lizzie did it just for you.
That Victory at Sea came out on Friday night. And I was, you know, in elementary school. I wasn't going out on dates or anything. I wouldn't hang out with girls back then. Yeah.
Hell no.
And I'd watch all those war documentaries, and that Victory at Sea was on. Well, that was really cool playing that theme song for that. That's great.
Well, I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah. That was really neat.
Thank you, Lizzie,
for putting that up on the air, and whoever got that going there, that was tremendous.
It's always been teenage America.
Absolutely.
I sure couldn't do it. Go ahead, Bitterinder.
comparison about the South and Germany and how we were lied into war and how the civilians were treated. So we had talked about all the things that Lincoln, who preserved, who saved the Union, we're told. No, he destroyed the Union of sovereign states and replaced it with a federal dictatorship. But anyway, so Lincoln actually admitted that he needed a war. The seven states that left weren't coming back in. And they had even sent peace commissioners to Washington to try to negotiate these two forts that were occupied in the South by a foreign enemy, Fort Sumter in Charleston and Fort Pickens in Pensacola Harbor, which effectively shut down those two harbors. Pensacola was the main port in Florida at that time. Miami was nothing. It was just a little Indian village on the coastline there. And so Pensacola was pretty much shut down by the federal troops occupying the fort there and blocking the harbor. So Lincoln admitted that he needed a war, and he needed to goad the South into firing the first shot so he could take the high ground and say, oh, my goodness gracious, the wonderful Stars and Stripes, yes, have been fired upon, and now we have to retaliate. And people said, well, when the Southerners fired on Fort Sumter, that's what caused the other six states to leave, you know, Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, Arkansas, Missouri, and Kentucky. They all passed the Ordinance of Secession. No, that's not right. Those six states voted to leave the Union when Lincoln called for an army to invade the South, and that's what drove them out. So anyway, that's what happened. But there's a British historian that said, it had a good quote. He said, the aggressor in a war is not necessarily the one who fires the first shot, but the aggressor in the war is the one who causes the first shot to be fired. And that was the same thing that happened between Germany, England, and France over Germany going into Poland to rescue the German citizens that were being attacked. Their businesses were being taken away from them or vandalized. And German citizens were being murdered by the Poles. And Churchill and the French told them, you provoke an incident there, and we'll jump in on your side in a war against Germany. And like we said, Churchill wanted Germany defeated and put down in Europe because Germany was a much better economic situation than England was. And England still hadn't come out of the Depression yet. So that's how we were lied into two wars, one in the United States in 1861 to 65, and one starting in Europe in 1939. And, you know, the Poles weren't real smart to ally themselves with France and Britain, because I think this is where Pollock jokes first started. If you look at a map of Europe, here's England across the English Channel over to the left or the west of your map. Here's France right on the channel to the left of your map. Here's Poland way over to the east or to the right of your map. And who's between Poland, England, and France? Germany. So how are they going to get there to rescue the Poles with Germany sitting right between them? Did they think the Germans were just going to say, oh, come right ahead, we open up the Autobahn for you, just zoom right on through there? Yeah. Oh, golly. But it didn't matter.
They didn't think about that.
They got the war.
That went out.
They got the war that they wanted, and even that slimy old crippled snake Roosevelt, the war started in Europe in 1939. We weren't in the war until 1941. But in 1939 and 1940, Roosevelt ordered our Navy and Coast Guard to open fire on German ships and submarines. We weren't in the war, but we had our Navy firing on German ships and submarines. And we did everything else that we could to provoke a war with Germany. We were selling war materials to England, which was in violation of our Neutrality Act. And so the comparison between the slimy snakes in the Lincoln administration and the slimy snakes in the Roosevelt administration is pretty much the same. We had crooks operating the United States government trying to sucker the country into a war both with the Lincoln administration and the Roosevelt administration. So the war was fought for a large part against the civilian population. This was something that hadn't been done before, both in the South and in Germany. And if you look at these old photographs of Richmond, of Charleston, of Atlanta, of Columbia, South Carolina, the cities that were targets of the Yankee invasion, and you compare those photographs to the bombed out cities in Germany, really it's hard to distinguish which one was destroyed in 1863 and which city was destroyed in 1944 and 1945, because both countries had their civilian population targeted, and that certainly happened over here. The siege of Charleston, South Carolina, was the longest siege of any city in the Western Hemisphere. It lasted over 3 years. And the Federals landed heavy siege artillery on Sullivan's Island, and they would elevate their guns to fire over the Confederate defensive lines and aim for the church spires at the churches in downtown Charleston, South Carolina. The reason being, every church pew was full of wounded soldiers and civilians. They turned all the churches into hospital wards. And so our wonderful northern friends were trying to collapse the roof of these churches to kill off, well, first of all, the wounded and sick civilians and soldiers that were there. They couldn't get out of the building once it started to collapse. But the main reason was to kill off the doctors and nurses who were taking care of the wounded civilians and the military personnel. Another wonderful thing that the wonderful U.S. Army did. Eddie, have you ever heard of the Immortal 600?
Vaguely, but that happened.
That happened during the siege of Charleston. The wonderful U.S. Army under Lincoln took 600 Confederate prisoners out of Point Lookout, Maryland. It was a prisoner of war camp, kind of a death camp, really, what it was. They would take Confederates and wouldn't feed them. They would starve them. They would freeze them during the winter in the north. They figured that was the easiest way to kill off Confederate soldiers, because Confederate soldiers out in the field, they could shoot, and they could shoot straight. And
yes,
they didn't
want
to have to handle them out in a combat situation where the Southern boys were armed and could return shot for shot. So it's much easier to take their prisoners and starve them to death, deny them medical treatment, and leave them exposed in the wintertime and just kill them off that way. So anyway, they took 600 of these prisoners from Point Lookout, Maryland, took them down to Charleston, and staked them out in front of Yankee artillery positions.
Damn.
They used them as human shields. So if the Confederate return fire to the Yankee artillery fell a few yards short, those exploding shells were going to hit their own people. Well, the Confederates weren't dumb like they portrayed on television. They just elevated their artillery, lobbed the shells over the Yankee lines, and started dropping artillery shells in on the Yankee headquarters where the generals were hiding behind the lines and the hangers-on, the people that were in the rear with the gear. But, yeah, the Immortal 600, the North used human shields, prisoners, during the siege of Charleston. So then here we go back in the comparison again. Between the South and the war against the civilians in Germany. And Hamburg, Germany, was firebombed toward the end of the war and pretty much destroyed. And the people that are making up the stories that we were told said that, well, the Germans bombed London, and so that's what they said. But after the break, we'll tell you what really happened.
Yes, and I'll have something to add as soon as we come back to something you just said, Peter. People don't go anywhere. This is the most amazing interview we've had in a long time. Be right back, folks.
How How would you like to help this program reach more people and earn silver at the same time? Call or text 801-669-2211 for complete details.
Breaking news this hour from townhall.com. I'm John Scott. The White House is downplaying a trade court's ruling that blocks President Trump's import tariffs. White House correspondent Greg Cluxton reports.
In the view of White House economic advisor Kevin Hassett, the trade court's decision striking down most of the tariffs is just a hiccup. He blamed activist judges, even though Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan nominated two of the three judges who issued the ruling. Hassett told Fox Business that it's not going to affect trade negotiations with other countries and that the White House is very confident the court's ruling is incorrect. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Also at townhall.com, a federal judge has extended an order blocking the Trump administration's attempt to bar Harvard University from enrolling foreign students. U.S. District Judge Allison Burroughs extended the block she imposed last week with a temporary restraining order on the government action. Harvard sued the Department of Homeland Security on Friday. That's after Secretary Kristi Noem revoked its ability to host foreign students at its campus in Cambridge, Massachusetts. In health news, the Trump administration canceled some flu research for one drug company. Correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Moderna says it was notified Wednesday that Health and Human Services had withdrawn funds to pay for development and purchase of such an investigational vaccine that would include H5N1 bird flu. It would be an mRNA vaccine using the same technology that allowed its development of vaccines to fight COVID-19. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has expressed deep skepticism regarding mRNA vaccines. Moderna had just announced positive interim results from an early-stage trial of the vaccine that targeted H5 bird flu virus. I'm Donna Warder.
And on Wall Street, the Dow is down 1 point. The NASDAQ composite ahead 46. More at townhall.com.
Dennis Prager here for Equity Protect, the company that completely prevents home title theft and fraud. I've met Jim and Ryan, the owners of Equity Protect. They started Equity Protect because title fraud and equity theft are direct threats to American consumers, especially if you own your home free and clear or have high equity. Most title lock companies merely monitor your title, then let you know once fraud has occurred. Equity Protect is simply better. Equity Protect completely stops any attempts to steal your home equity and ownership. Get your free risk assessment at EquityProtect.com. If you're low risk, sign up for their free monitoring service. If you're medium to high risk, get their full protection. For a limited time, my listeners can get 30% off your first year with the discount code PRAGER30. Go to EquityProtect.com/Prager. That's EquityProtect.com/Prager. Or call 888-213-2959. That's 888-213-2959.
This is Michael Hill, Chief of the League of the South. I listen to Blood River Radio, and you should too. In fact, you should be telling your friends, your family, and your associates to listen to Eddie Miller and the good folks at Blood River Radio. They stand resolutely for the preservation of white civilization, what we once called Christendom, and they stand against the ongoing campaign of white genocide. In these trying and uncertain times, it's more important than ever to speak and act in defense of our God, our people, and our civilization. Blood River Radio speaks the truth and speaks it boldly. I've been on this show many times as a guest, and I'm very proud of my association with you. May our just cause prevail. Hail victory.
This is a battle. A battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
The Epoch times.com.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
Dear Blood River Radio family, man, this is a dynamite interview. I'm going to have a daggum rest after this show, buddy. I'm telling you, and the bitter ender just picked up. You know how he always does? I try to be calm and everything. He gets me going, man. But anyway. But the bitter ender is going to tell you about the Mengele before his time. But anyway, go ahead, bitter ender.
Well, we were comparing, once again, our theme for today is comparing the Southern civilians to the German civilians and what they suffered at the hands of the wonderful United States military and our British allies. So we were talking about the attacks on Hamburg, Germany. And then, of course, they don't mention that in history. The British were trying to provoke some kind of incident. And they launched five separate night air raids on the city of Hamburg. And they didn't care whether they were bombing military targets or civilian targets. And at night, they could follow the coastline till they got to where they thought Hamburg was and then dump their payloads of bombs on whatever was down there. And if it hit civilians, fine. If it hit military targets, fine. And then turn around and scurry back to Great Britain. And this went on five different times before the Germans retaliated and attacked London. And all we hear about is the Blitz, and the Luftwaffe yes. coming over and bombing London. And, of course, they hustled Churchill out. They had radar, and they knew when the German planes were coming. So they hustled Churchill out of London when there was an air attack coming, and then would bring him back in the next morning. And he'd walk through the rubble with his walking cane and his cigar, and you know, oh, he's right there with him. No, he wasn't. He's 40 or 50 miles out in the boondock somewhere. He didn't go through anything like that. But that's more of the lies and misinformation. Oh, and of course, we had that Edward R. Murrow reporting from London during the Blitz, and you can hear the bombs in the background and the anti-aircraft fire, you know, trying to sucker us into the war. So, like I said, Hamburg was attacked five times, and the Germans protested. They said, you're coming over here at night, you can't see any targets, and you're just dumping bombs on civilians. And the British, of course they did, because they wanted to provoke Germany into retaliation, just like Roosevelt was trying to carry out attacks against German shipping before we were even in the war, to try to provoke some kind of German retaliation, and they might sink a little 20-foot minesweeper out off the coast of New England or something. Oh, that's it. They sank an American ship. We got to go to war. We got to launch a war now. And the Germans wouldn't take the bait. And, of course, it was December 7th, 41, and the Japanese attack that got us into the war. So, anyway, that was the garbage that was put out there. Okay, how were the civilians treated? Well, they were treated horribly. The German civilians were starved. The Allied bombing took out the railroads, took out the bridges, took out the highways. They couldn't get food to the people, and they were starving them to death. And that's what the U.S. Yankee military always does. They target civilians. Those are easy targets. How many farmers are going to fight back against a B-17 bomber coming over? How's that farmer going to fight back with a pitchfork? So they're real brave when they can attack civilians. They don't do as well when they had to go up against the real Luftwaffe pilots early in the war in the Messerschmitt, and they shot down tons of American bombers. It wasn't until the end of the war when they got the P-51 Mustang and enough planes that they could replace their losses that the Allied Air Force had the upper hand in the war. So, once again, attacks against civilians. Firebombing Hamburg, firebombing Dresden. They talked about Dresden being the Hiroshima of the European theater because as many civilians were burned to death in Dresden as were burned to death by the atomic bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan. The civilians, once again, when the Russians started closing in, which we supplied with airplanes and tanks and trucks and all the war materials, they should have just let Germany and Russia fight it out and just tell them, well, the last one standing, turn out the lights, whoever's left, and let the Germans take care of Russia. And that's what Patton said. That's what got Patton killed. Patton said, we butchered the wrong hog. We should have been fighting on the side of the Germans against the Bolsheviks. And boy, that set off all kind of alarm bells in the Roosevelt cabinet and Eisenhower, that somebody like Patton, that was a combat veteran, actually told the truth. And that's why Eisenhower stopped Patton from going across the Rhine and going into Germany. Patton could have wound this war up about 3 months before it actually ended. And think of how many lives would have been saved had he been able to do that. But they'd made a deal with Stalin to turn over all of Eastern Europe to the Russians. And so if Patton got to Berlin first and had the Third Army there, and here came the Russians, Patton would have told him to go shove it. We're not giving up anything to you commie bastards.
You got that right.
We captured this, and we're hanging on to it. So they couldn't allow Patton to get in there, and that's why Eisenhower had him stopped. So anyway, the prisoners after the war, Eisenhower starved the German soldiers that were surrendered. And, well, back it up to the civilians. There were thousands and thousands of civilians from these Eastern European countries that were fleeing to the West to get away from the Red Army, because the Russians and the Mongols that they had with them would attack the women, rape the women, gang rape the women, and a lot of times these women were nailed on a barn door and crucified. So this is what our great Russian allies were doing. And that's why these people were fleeing to the West. They didn't know how bad the Americans or the British were going to be, but surely they couldn't be any worse than the Russians were. And that's why Dresden was so full of so many people. Its population had tripled or quadrupled by the time the Allies decided to firebomb Dresden. And there were no military targets there. It was packed full of civilians. And they brought the bombers over with the high explosives. The Americans came over in the daytime with high explosives and dropped them. So at night, when they had all the fire engines and the ambulances out and trying to dig these people out of the rubble, this is where the British bombers came in and used all the incendiary bombs to set the place on fire. And the heat was so intense that a lot of the people were actually sucked up off the ground. The backdraft sucked them up off the ground and sucked human bodies back into the fire. And the heat was so bad that the pavement, asphalt pavement, was melting, and a lot of people were stuck in the pavement of the streets, their feet burning, and then eventually the fire came over. So this is our wonderful civilian warfare that we got going. So after the war, Eisenhower tried to starve the German prisoners of war. They were put in these huge outdoor compounds with barbed wire around them, and they would actually shoot German civilians, and they wouldn't feed them, and they had no sanitary conditions at all. They were just left out in these fields with barbed wire around it. And then the civilians that would try to throw a loaf of bread or something over the wire to the prisoners, the American guards were ordered to shoot any civilians that were trying to feed these prisoners. So you compare that then to the wonderful United States military and their prisoner war camps they ran in this country. Places like Camp Douglas, Illinois, where I had some of my ancestors that were surrendered at Fort Donelson, they shipped them up there to Camp Douglas after the fall of Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River in Tennessee. And Fort Donelson, you talk about war crimes. The guards would just indiscriminately fire through these wooden walls of the barracks, trying to hit some of the prisoners inside there. They put up bleachers outside the prison compound at Camp Douglas, and they would charge people a nickel to climb up in these bleachers and peep over the wall and look at these Confederates. It was worth a nickel to the wonderful population of Chicago just to stare at Confederate prisoners. And then the other thing they did during the wintertime, if there's a minor infraction, just anything at all that they were standing too close to a stove or whatever. And they would take these prisoners outside of the barracks. Now, this is Chicago in the wintertime, snow on the ground. They would make the prisoners stand barefoot in the snow while the guards would go back inside where they had a nice wood-burning stove. And then they would go out and look, and if their feet had moved from where they were supposed to be standing, they would strip the prisoners down, strip them from the waist down and make them sit in the snow. And this was kind of torture that we got from the wonderful U.S. Army, what they did to people and that were prisoners of war. In Elmira, New York, which the Southerners referred to as Hellmira, New York, they would not provide any winter clothing to the prisoners. And all they had were just whatever they had as uniforms. And if they were captured in the summertime, it's probably cotton trousers and a cotton shirt. And that's all they had in the winter. And the excuse was, well, if we gave them winter clothing, they might look like civilians and they could escape. So they're going to let them starve to death and freeze to death rather than try to take care of their prisoners. So this is what happened to Southern prisoners that were taken by the wonderful U.S. Army.
The U.S. Army was being
right after the break.
Thank you so much. Be right back. Thank you, veteran.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church, a congregation of God's covenant people. Informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
A Bienis is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
We're Blood River Radio family. We're coming to the end. I tell you, I am wore out. This has been the highest adrenaline program we have had, I think. But anyway, before we went to the break, and just to the comment out there, and what the bitter ender did, he had described perfectly what the Yankees were doing to the Southerners, the unspeakable torture, making them stand barefoot in the snow, then making them strip their clothes off of standing barefoot, no winter clothing, no food. What they were doing exactly what they accused Joseph Mengele of doing 75 years later. And at least that's what the bitter ender he just described. I think the Joseph Mengele could not do anything worse than what those Yankees did. But anyway, bitter ender, carry on, brother.
We'll carry on one more thing there for you, Eddie, about the prisoner situation. Of course, all that you hear about in school or on history or in the so-called history channel on TV, the only prisoner of war camp you hear about is the Confederate prisoner of war camp at Andersonville, Georgia. and they talk about, oh, that was so terrible. The Union prisoners were mistreated. Oh, they were starved. They were yada, 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 on and on and on. Okay, they don't give you the facts. So here, as Paul Harvey would say, here is the rest of the story.
Yes.
The prisoner of war camp at near Andersonville, Georgia, was designed for 300. During the last years and year and a half of the war, it had over 3,000 there. Now, why did they overload it? Very simple. Lincoln ended the prisoner exchange. He said that when Confederates are exchanged as prisoners, they go back in the Army. When Yankees were exchanged as prisoners and came back north, they wouldn't enlist in the Army again. They went home. They said, they've had enough of this. So they would have to fight the Southerners a second and third time. And so the prison was greatly overwhelmed for the number of people that it was designed for. And they said they were starved. They deliberately starved these poor Union soldiers. And you've seen these pictures, I know, of these guys they took after the war was over. And they looked like skeletons with skin stretched across the bones. Well, I got news for them. The whole South was starving. And they never, never, never took pictures of the guards, because the guards were in as bad a shape as the prisoners were. Because the guards got the, at Andersonville, the Southern guards, Confederate guards, got the same rations that the prisoners had. And they were starving too, the whole South was. Because, once again, this is a war against civilian population. Destroying the farms, destroying the manufacturing regions, destroying the railroads, and trying to starve out the civilian population. You know, the U.S. military has discovered a long time ago, it's a lot easier to attack old men, women, and children than it is to fight against an army that's pretty much on the same level you are. And so if you can go after the civilian population, that makes you feel like a great warrior, and boy, you're tough, and oh, we whipped that enemy. Yeah, you whipped the civilian population. You did a good job on them. See how you do against the real people. So that was the thing about our prisoner of war camps, both in the North and in Europe after the war, and what they did to the German prisoner of war. Another parallel, and then we'll wind it up here on our last segment, is after the war to crush Southern independence, and after the war to destroy Germany and make them a pawn of the Allies, were war crime trials after the war. And we've all heard about the Nuremberg War Crime Tribunal, which is just a Soviet show trial, a way of humiliating the Germans and getting revenge on German officers and civilians, people in the German government. And if you notice in history, there are never war crimes tribunals held for the winners, even though they commit as many war crimes as probably more than the losing side, but they never put their people on trial. It's always the losing side that gets put on trial. And the testimony that they got at Nuremberg, a lot of the prisoners were tortured to finally make confessions or incriminate someone else, horribly tortured by the Allies to get confessions out of them. And we had talked about Joachim von Ribbentrop. They murdered him. He had committed no war crimes that ever, except he was the German foreign minister, and he had tried and tried and tried before the war to work out some kind of peace agreement between the British and the French. Well, they couldn't leave him alive. If that information got out about how Germany had tried to work out some kind of solution about Poland and about the economics differences between Germany and England, if that information got out, it'd make it look like the whole war was fought for nothing or fought just for money. So they had to execute him so he couldn't release all of the copies he had of papers from the Foreign Service to the British and to the French. Same thing about Andersonville. They had to have a scapegoat. They couldn't blame Lincoln for stopping the prison exchange because John Wilkes Booth had just executed Lincoln for his war crimes. Well, now that's the first time that I've ever heard of the leader of a winning side being executed for war crimes. But Mr. Booth took care of that. So they couldn't blame Lincoln because now he had been deified, and all these northern papers had these woodcut drawings, and they couldn't reproduce photographs back then, but they did the woodcuts of Lincoln rising up to heaven with Jesus on his on his arm, or Jesus had Lincoln on his arm rising up to heaven. So they couldn't do that. So they had to find some kind of scapegoat for Lincoln's decision to end the prisoner exchange. And up until then, you had 100 of our guys. We've got 100 of yours. We'll meet at a certain point, exchange them, or you know, however many. But after Lincoln said they weren't going to do that anymore, that's when conditions got so bad in the South, and toward the end of the war, the Southern people were starving, not only prisoners. So they had to find a scapegoat. So they got the commandant of the prison at Andersonville, Colonel Heinrich Wirtz. He was a Swiss immigrant, and he had started in the war but received a very severe wound to the arm, and his arm he could not use anymore. So it was incapacitated. So they made him commandant of this prison, and it worked fine for the first year or two when they had enough food and they had a small number of prisoners there, and they would make an exchange and send the ones north that were going to be exchanged with the northerners for the southerners. And then Lincoln stops the prisoner exchange, and the place is hugely overcrowded. And they said he murdered prisoners of war. Well, some of the Yankee prisoners came to him and asked him to do something about this group of Yankees inside the prison called the Raiders. And they would beat up other northern prisoners and steal their money and steal their food. So he told them to hold a trial and pick out the ones that were doing this. The northerners, the Yankee prisoners, did, and those five or six were executed because that's what the northerners wanted, to get rid of these people that were attacking the other prisoners. So anyway, after the war, he was hauled off to old Capitol Prison in D.C., and they had a trial, and of course, like most trials run by the government, there were lies and false testimony and all the nonsense they could come up with to accuse him of deliberately starving and mistreating these prisoners at Andersonville. And he was sentenced to be executed. And so the night before the execution date, they came to him and they said, listen, if you will testify that President Jefferson Davis of the Confederacy ordered you to mistreat these prisoners, we will release you. Because they had captured Jefferson Davis and had him in prison in the dungeon at Fort Monroe, and they had a light on where he couldn't sleep, and they had a guard stomping up and down trying to keep him from having a chance to go to sleep. But they couldn't figure out what they were going to do with him, because Chief Justice Taney of the Supreme Court said, you don't want to put Jefferson Davis on trial because you cannot prove that secession was illegal. And if you can't prove that, then why were you fighting a war for 4 years that cost the lives of nearly 700,000 Americans? So they had Davis locked up, and they were hoping he was going to die in prison, but they needed an excuse to execute him. So they told Major Wirtz, you say that Jefferson Davis ordered you to mistreat these prisoners, and we will release you. And Wirtz told them, then I'm a dead man. And the next day they hung him at Capitol Prison in D.C. So that's, once again, some of the treatment that the Southerners got after our war for independence and the German military officers and civilian people got in the administration of Germany after the war. And there have been several books written about how corrupt and how illegal the Nuremberg War Crime Tribunal was. And it's the same thing today. If you look at it, nobody has put the Israelis on trial for their war crimes against the Palestinian civilians, and they've been condemned by every country in the world. But then when it comes before the United Nations, the United States vetoes it, since the United States always sits on the UN Security Council, and they can veto anything that comes up. And they always veto anything, any condemnation of the Israelis and the war crimes that they're committing against Palestinian civilians and children in the Gaza Strip and wherever. So history always repeats itself. You know, they say those who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it. Well, obviously, we never study history, because the United States military and their brutality against the Southern civilians, and then the United States military and the U.S. government and their brutality against the German civilians, and now we're back in a rogue nation and brutality against more civilians. So same old, here we go again.
See, I don't guess it's because they own our Congress and our media and everything else could be owned.
Bitter Ender, you did a superb job. I think this is going to go down and for 3 hours, the best 3 hours we've probably ever done. We've done 1 hour that was good, but never 3 hours. Anyway, thank you so much, Bitter Ender, for being a stalwart of Blood River Radio, being my brother. Thank you, Blood River Radio family, for tuning in. Thank you, Teenage America, for making this show great. Same time, same place next week. God willing, we'll see you then. Good night, everybody.